You know, how cool is that? I mean, that is powerful, powerful stuff we just saw on the screens. Listen, I can't wait to hear next week how much money we have to work with, how much comes in over this weekend and the next few days as people give the return. And we're able to give 100% of that to these two organizations to literally lift kids out of poverty. And so that's what we're going to be doing. And that's what investing is. Investing is when you take something from over here and you put it over here and you hope that it grows and exponentially has an impact well beyond what it would have done in this location. And we can make all kinds of investments. We can make financial investments. We can make relational investments. Easter today is really about God making a spiritual investment, building into all of humanity through what he did on the cross. So really excited you're here today. And as Eric said, we're starting this new series, Building People. And my name's Kurt, by the way. If we haven't met before, it's great to meet you. And I'm what they call a pastor here at Crosspoint. And so we're going to go ahead and pray, and then we're going to dive in today. Let's do that. God, thank you. We can come into a room like this. It's amazing. The people all over the globe, the far reaches of the corners of the world, there are people that are celebrating the very same event that we are talking about today that happened over 2,000 years ago, and it's still changing the world. And I know we're all different places and our understanding of that and our belief of that, and yet you're a God who can transcend that. So God, I just pray that you meet us where we are today. Help us to see things that maybe we've never seen before so that we can all go to a new place. Pray these things in your name and character. Amen. Well, you know, Easter is a pretty intense story. I don't know how much you frequent the Easter story, but it's very intense. It's a story about a very intense decision to take resources from one location and to use them in another place to build into something else. And really, Easter is the way that God balances the scales. It's the way that God, you know, kind of balances your and my debt. He eliminates the debt. And if you're a guest here this morning, by the way, really excited you've chosen to join us this morning. We realize there's a lot of places you could be. And, you know, there's a strategy that some churches use. In fact, I've been a part of churches that have used this strategy where on Easter you pull out all the bells and whistles. And, man, we give you a great experience. We kind of trick you into having a good experience. And then you come back the next week and you're like, oh, so this is what it is? I thought it was like last weekend. And so, you know, I don't want to trick a CEO this morning, all right? I mean, because there's a lot of CEOs in here, and CEOs are smart people. And I'm not talking about CEOs like, you know, 500 Fortune kind of companies. I'm talking like a different CEO. I'm talking like Christmas, Easter only CEOs, all right? I mean, that, you know, those are the kind of CEOs. And so if you're a Christmas, Easter only person, we're super excited you're here today. And you know, we aren't really doing that. In fact, what we're talking about today is something we talk about all the time around here. And this is a very normal mode for us today. So today, I want to talk about the amazing magic of the Easter story. And I want to kind of invest in you through this story and kind of build you and help you see things, the ways that God has built into you, because maybe some of us have never seen that side of God. And so Jesus, when he was on the cross, there are four different accounts in the Bible that of Jesus' life. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They're the first four books in the New Testament. They're kind of the authorized biographies, if you will, of Jesus' life. And there's a different accounts in each of the versions, and they, none of them contradict one another, but they kind of support one another, but they all do have different details. And the two things that are standard is they all four have the crucifixion, where Jesus goes to the cross, and then they also have the resurrection. But the rest of the details are a little bit different, and specifically the seven things that Jesus said as he was hanging on the cross. And today I want us to look at those seven things. These seven statements he makes are the investments he makes. It's the way he ultimately builds into all humanity, and it's really just a reflection of the first 33 years of his life. So let's take a look at them one by one this morning. Number one, we find in Luke chapter 23, Jesus on the cross, and he says this. He says, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Now, at this point in Jesus' week, he would be having what I would refer to as a bad day. All right, I mean, you know, most people call it Good Friday. I don't know why it's Good Friday, all right? Because, I mean, you know, this is how Jesus' day went. He got betrayed by a friend with a kiss, Judas, and then he goes to a trial that's, you know, a rigged court case. It's riddled with all kinds of evidence that doesn't exist. And then, you know, the Romans beat him. They beat him with a cat of nine tails, which is a whip, and it has straps of leather on the end of the whip with, like, you know, metal and rocks and glass in the tips of the whip. And they just thrash him like 39 times because 40 would be too many. So 39 times, you know, and they insult him. They hurl insults at him. I mean, they literally fillet the flesh off of his back. they're insulting him left and right, and they're clubbing him. And in the midst of that, they say, Jesus, if you're really the Son of God, if you are who you say you are, then save yourself as I get ready to beat you again. And they continue to club him and beat him. And they strip him naked, right? Now, we see these nice photos of Jesus on the cross with a loincloth, right? There was no loincloth, all right? I mean, he was flipping buck naked on the cross, totally naked, and while he's hanging there to die, beneath him at his feet are the soldiers who put him there, and they're gambling for his clothing. And it's in that moment he looks down at them, and he says, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. This right here is the investment, the first investment on the cross, the investment of forgiveness. Now, this isn't the transaction of forgiveness, all right? Nobody's asked for forgiveness yet. This isn't like somebody's earned forgiveness. Jesus just gives it. He makes the investment. Well, I would love for every single one of us to walk out of this room today feeling better, all right? And that's not my ultimate goal today. Though, wouldn't that be cool if you walked out, like, feeling better today? You know the best way you can always walk out of a room and feel better about yourself is if when you're in that room, you make the investment of forgiveness and you forgive somebody before they ask for it. You'll always walk out feeling better. Second thing Jesus says. Find this in Luke 23:14. Truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise. All right, now this comes when there's some banter going on the cross. Jesus in the middle, two criminals on the side of him. We don't know really what the other criminals did. We don't know what their crimes were. It had to be somewhat serious. It wasn't like jaywalking, all right? It wasn't like they were out jaywalking and they get crucified for that. But nonetheless, one of these criminals says, hey, Jesus, if you're all that, then just pull yourself down. Come on, you can do it. Pull yourself down. They still do that in Little League? They still like do the hey now, you can hit it, come on. It's like a taunting tactic, right? They don't do that anymore, huh? I don't have kids in Little League. So, all right, well, nonetheless, this is what's going on the cross. They're like taunting Jesus, and the one criminal's doing this. The other one looks at him and says, hey, knock it off. He doesn't deserve to be here. You and I, we deserve to be here. And then he turns and looks at Jesus, and he says, Jesus, when you come into your kingdom today, will you remember me? And Jesus says, truly I say to you, Today, you will be with me in paradise. This, my friends, is called the investment of hope. This is the hope that tomorrow can actually be better than today. See, Jesus didn't say, what he didn't say is, wow, man, I really like what you're saying. Keep it up. Keep saying that. It's going to get better. Eventually, you'll get there. He didn't say that. He didn't say, well, here's what's going to happen. You're going to go into the ground. You're going to come up a different creature, you're going to be reincarnated, and you're going to have the chance to work your way up the ladder a little more, and you're probably going to die into the ground again, then you'll work yourself up a little higher. He didn't say that. He didn't say, oh man, sucks to be you. Time is running out. I mean, we're about at your last breath. You've waited too long. No, you know what he says? He says, today, you will be with me in paradise. This is the immediate grace of Jesus right here. This is the immediate moment, the immediate love of God. I don't have to work for it, I have to earn it. He says, you can get his approval and you can get it right now by simply receiving today. It's the investment of hope. Next thing we see Jesus saying is in John 19. And as you're going to see, some of these are quick little bank shots and then others I'm going to talk and build out a little further. John 19 says, when Jesus saw his mother and the disciples whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, woman, behold. Actually, didn't probably say it that way. He didn't probably say, woman! You ever wonder how Jesus said things? Sometimes I read stuff and I'm like, wonder how he said that. He probably didn't say it that way. But I wonder, why did he not say, mom? Hey, mom, hey, mother. He didn't say that. He said, woman, behold your son. And then he said to the disciple, behold your mother. And from that hour, the disciple took her to his own home. So right here, Jesus kind of blows out the concept of family here, if you will. I mean, Jesus right here, he's saying extended family basically includes your relatives, blood relatives, but it also is friends. It's people who are really committed to you. Now understand, Mary wasn't destitute right here, all right? She had two other sons. It's not like she wasn't going to be taken care of, but Jesus is actually giving us the investment of family right here. It's like he's saying, woo-hoo, hi family. That's from Frozen, all right? Some of you will get that when you watch the movie, all right? He's like, hey, this is your family. He's like, John, behold your mother. Mom, mother, woman, behold your son. See, John was Jesus' closest friend. In fact, there were other disciples that were jealous of John because they knew he was the closest one. And so John looks at his friend John and says, John, you are about to get the best mom you could ever ask for. Take your mom. He invested in family. Next thing Jesus says, Matthew 27, says about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? Now this is one of the most confusing points in the entire Bible right here. All right, this is that moment when darkness comes over the earth. I mean, it's middle of day and bam, darkness just immediately. So dark, you can't see your hands right in front of your face. And in this moment, it's like a meteorological thing where it's daytime and immediately everything goes dark. And it happens as Jesus says, why have you forsaken me? God, why have you forsaken me? And what's interesting about this is when we understand the Bible talks about how Jesus and God are one. They are one and the same. You know, God, Jesus even says at one point, I and the Father are one, which means in Jewish culture, it means we're the same thing. And so, this is one of those moments where like, but if it's Jesus the Son and God the Father and God the Spirit, this is very complex. I mean, they're the same and yet they're distinctly different. I mean, if that's the case, how can Jesus actually feel a separation? How can he feel this moment of being forsaken if he's God? And this is a real mind bender right here, okay? It's a mind bender. And the main thing to focus on is why is he feeling this way? Why the darkness as soon as he says this? And the reason is because of all of the debt that you and I have accumulated. Right? All of the debt. Every time you and I do something, every time I do something that God doesn't like, I create a spiritual debt and a separation and a distance. Every time you cheat, every time you do something like lying or looking at porn, there's a separation from God. Every time you take credit for the work project and even though it was a team effort, there's a separation from God. Every time we turn our head to poverty, there's a separation from God. And so it was in that moment, these are all the ways that we have separated ourselves from God. And this is the way I separate myself from God, which by the way, God has to deal with debt, right? We have a spiritual debt. God has to deal with that because he's a God of justice. And we want God to be a God of justice, right? I mean, we see societies in the world where there's no justice, there's no health in the culture because there's no justice. It's called a banana republic society. We don't want that. We want there to be justice. We see a court case on TV that a judge just lets somebody go scot-free. And what do? We cry foul. We're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Justice needs to be served. Why do we say that? It's because God has hardwired us in his image for justice. And so the payment was Jesus. He invested in the solution. The investment was the solution. The theological term is the substitutionary sacrificial atonement of Jesus. I don't use words like that because his name's Sam. It's the atonement. He's the solution, the substitution. If you do anything with stocks, the big question is, when do you own the stock? If you have somebody manage your stocks, people have explained this to me. I'm always a little confused by it. When do you own the stock? I mean, if you go to E-Trade and you're like, clicking around, you're going to make the investment and buy some stock. I mean, is it the moment you're like, click, and then boom, the stock is now yours? Is that the moment? Or is it once the money has been wired transfer, and then at that moment you own it? Or is it, when the guy on the floor is like, hey, give me 10 of those. Somebody's bought 10 of those. Is it that moment? I mean, what's the moment? I really get confused on this. I've been explained like 5 times to me. And so what I know is that, when you buy a stock, you don't exactly own it right at that moment. Or do you? I see some finance guys here. I don't know. I get confused by this. So nonetheless, the question, when did the atonement, when did that wire transfer take place? When forgiveness was granted. And I don't know exactly when that took place. Theologians believe it was in this moment right here. It was when all of your debt, all of your spiritual debt, all of our sin, the things that separate us from God, were wired, transferred onto the back of Jesus, and God looks down at his son on the cross in that moment, and he's disgusted. Because he sees all of your sin and my sin on his son. And see, Jesus wasn't dying for himself. He had no sin. If he had sin in his life, then he would have been dying for himself, but he was dying for everyone else. He was the solution. And as it is, he's dying for us. This wire transfer takes place and goes on his back on the cross, and everything goes dark. I think that's the moment where God says, that's when it happened, right there. And at the same time, There's a wire transfer into our lives. I mean, you know, the scripture talks about how all of the goodness of God, the character of God, the good things he brings are actually wire transferred into our lives as our junk is wire transferred to his back. And it's crazy. I mean, because what he says once you receive that wire transfer and the goodness of God begins to come, even though you continue to have sin in your life, even though you do things that can separate you from God, you know what God sees when he looks at your life? He no longer sees the debt. The Bible says he sees Jesus. Crazy. I have on my hands are kind of cut up. I've got a little bit of black paint. I was working with some magnetic paint yesterday, some chalkboard paint, and I couldn't get it all off. I could have soaked a Brillo pad in like gasoline and scrubbed for 5 minutes. That didn't sound very fun, so I left it on there. But nonetheless, I'm kind of a do-it-yourselfer. I like to do things myself. I like to, sometimes it's out of financial necessity. Sometimes it's because I just need to do things for myself. And so I remember a few years ago, 7 or 8 years ago, I was sitting at a lunch with kind of a successful business person, at least successful in my mind. And we're sitting there eating, and he's asking about CrossPoint, wanting to know about CrossPoint. At one particular moment, he looks down at my hands, and he says, just mid-sentence, what's wrong with your hands? And I look down, I'm like, oh, they're all cut up and, you know, scratched up and kind of red. I'd been laying patio pavers behind my, you know, off the back of our house. And so I'd been working for 3 or 4 days, had blisters. And I said, oh, I've been laying a patio behind my house. And he just said, oh, that's not what I expected of you. I'm like, oh, well, what does that mean? I mean, you think I can't do that myself or what's the thing? And then I realized, see, he thought he was meeting with young, you know, hip church planner that makes scads and scads of money that hires people to do that kind of stuff, right? I mean, you know, sometimes when it's rare, every now and then somebody will be like, oh, I hear a rumor of how much money I make. And when I hear that, you know what my response usually is? Wow, that'd be nice. Wow, I would love that if I made that much money. You know, so he didn't realize he was working with somebody who changed his own oil. He didn't realize he was meeting with somebody who was a do-it-yourselfer that, you know, and as I was processing that, I thought, you know, he probably has this idea in his mind of televangelists and all these what a pastor is, has all these entourage around him, taking care of him, you know, providing for all his needs, make scads of money. You know, you start a new church, you can have all kinds of money. It doesn't work that way. All right, and so, you know, and I realized I don't like pay people to mow my grass, okay? I say to my 11-year-old daughter, mow the grass. That's where we should go. Go mow the grass. And she should. God bless America. That's what she does for us, all right? And so, you know, I don't hire people to do that. But I realized that, you know, there's something here with Jesus. See, when Jesus was on the cross, people didn't expect it. They're like, whoa, God doesn't go to the cross. I mean, God doesn't, like, take nails through his hands and his feet. I mean, God doesn't go without. God doesn't go without when he could have everything. He doesn't do that voluntarily. See, Jesus did the dirty work. He did the dirty work of debt riddance. It's crazy. Next thing we see, Matthew 19. It says, after this, Jesus, knowing that all was now finished, said to fulfill the scriptures, I thirst. And what Jesus was doing here is he's modeling something. This is what I would call the investment of self-denial. See, it was common for the Romans to want to keep the sport going, if you will. See, crucifixion was a sport. And so for them, it was just about how long can we keep this person alive and keep torturing them? They'd parade them through the town, you know, hurling insults and eggs and rocks. And when they got to the cross and actually put those being crucified up, they would take a sponge and dip it in wine and then place it on a spear. And then they'd raise it up to the person hanging there on the cross. And part of the purpose was to get them loopy. And, you know, so it deadened the pain a little bit, but the other part was to keep the sport going, if you will. So they could continue to insult and hurl and, you know, make fun of. And in this moment, Jesus is offered the wine. He says, I thirst. They give him the wine, and he rejects it. It's as if he's saying, I want to feel the full weight of the sin of the world. This is why I call it the investment of self-denial. See, for the last week, some of you have been identifying with this. Those of you who have been on Beans and Rice Week, you've denied yourself some things. You've taken on a posture of sustenance, of eating, you know, buying very little, even though you could buy a lot, in order to be generous with those who have very little so they have a shot at abundance. And didn't you feel closer to God as you were doing this? I mean, you probably didn't think about that, but didn't you feel closer to God as you're trekking through the week? You may not have even realized it, but you were actually emulating one of the character traits of God, the trait of self-denial. Right? See, every meal, right? Every meal, it has to be like Facebook worthy, right? We got to set our taste buds ablaze. Every meal, I got to be like, oh, look what I'm eating tonight. You know, I mean, every vacation has to be better than the last one. You know, every outfit has to be fly, like my outfit's fly. You know, I mean, everything we do, I don't know if it is or not, right? I just thought it was good. Everything we do, we want it to be Instagram worthy. We want it to be something I can post and say, hey, look at what I have now. See, the thought of not doing something really cool in order that I can do something else, this is called self-denial. It's called investment. Next thing he says on the cross, John 19, he says, it is finished. He says this right before, as he's stretched out, he puts his head down and says his last statement. What does he mean, it's finished? Well, one thing he means is the system by which people get to God, it's finished. I think another thing he means is, you know, he says, hey, God gave me a mission. He commissioned me on this earth to fulfill something. I've came and I've completed it. It's finished. I think he also means the way you and I know God, it's finished. It's done. It's done. You know, this is the investment of satisfaction, that justice is satisfied, that all we need to do to be received by him is to receive the grace. He's already paid the price. He's taken the position of the substitutionary role, the solution, and the wire transfer has happened to our hearts when we receive it. And when all of our junk goes to him, we receive all of his goodness. And see, this is where most of us get hung up. This is where most of us are like, well, Kurt, this is where I have to stop. Because you see, if you just knew, if you had a little picture of the stuff I've done even this week, I mean, this would not apply to me. If you just knew how many hearts I've trampled, this wouldn't apply to me. Listen, if God just knew the person I mean, if he could really see me for who I am, none of this would matter. And this is where Jesus says, no. He does. The satisfaction, it's given unconditionally. Last thing he says on the cross. Luke 23. Then Jesus, calling out with a loud voice, said, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And having said this, he breathed his last. So the last words of Jesus are, into your hands I commit my spirit. This is the investment of surrender. All right, surrender. This is the final act. This is Jesus modeling for us what it means to know God. And some of us are going to be able to surrender here in a few minutes. We're going to have the ability to surrender and say, God, I want to commit my life into your hands. Maybe some of us have done that before. Some of us maybe need a refresher on this. You know, maybe some of us for the very first time, you've never understood a God who isn't a God just like a cop up in the air waiting for you to make a mistake, but he's actually a God who's building, he's pouring himself into you even in the last moments on the cross, building into you as a person so your life can go to an entirely new place, doing for you something you could not do for yourself. It's kind of like physical poverty, spiritually lifting us out of our spiritual poverty into a new place. The question is, will we receive the investment? Interesting, one of the favorite pictures I find in the Bible comes from Isaiah chapter 49, and it's a picture of God and how he relates to his people. Here's what it says. It says, can a woman forget her nursing child that she should have no compassion on the son of her womb? Even these may forget, yet I will not forget you. Behold, I have engraved you on the palms of my hands. And so we have here God likened to a nursing woman. And he's talking about his people right here. And I've never breastfed before, never intend to, all right? But I've talked to women, primarily my wife, who has breastfed. And I know there's a bond that takes place between a mother and a child during that experience. And this is like God is saying, there's a bond between you and I that I will never forget. It's like the bond between a mother and a nursing child. And to take it a step further, he says, and I've tattooed you. Some translations say, I've tattooed you on my wrist, on my hand. Better yet, I've engraved you. The idea of tattooing, or better yet, chiseling. He says, I've chiseled you. When I took a nail into my wrist, it was me chiseling your face, engraving you onto the hands so I would never forget you. And God says, you know, when I took that nail, he said, I wasn't only looking at my heavenly Father, but I had before me your face that day when I went to the cross. I've engraved you. I've engraved you. That's how much I care for you. But you have to be willing to receive it, to be willing to receive the act that I did for you. Let's pray. God, what an incredible, 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 incredible thing. I mean, Easter, it's a day that we celebrate every year, but God, it was a single event. Again, that happened over 2,000 years ago, and we're still feeling the effects of it today. It's an event that gives us a hope that tomorrow can be better, that we can face whatever comes tomorrow because you gave us the investment of hope. You made the investment of family. You made the investment of being a solution, the investment of justice. I mean, you made the investment so that we wouldn't have to earn our way back, as we often try to do, but we could simply know you because that was your goal. God, you ultimately modeled for us what it means to surrender by committing our life into your hands. And God, for some of us, you're just stirring that in our heart right now. Maybe some of us have made that decision here this morning. We've received from you, but man, there's some junk in our life, some area in our life that man, we've just kind of taken back over, and we need to re-surrender that this morning. A relationship, something I've been a part of, whatever it might be, I need to re-surrender to say, God, I commit this to your hands. God, I give you my spiritual debt. I ask you to carry it. I want to receive your goodness. There might be others of us that have never taken that step. Maybe today's your day. For the first time, you've understood that God came to build into you, and he paid the price. He satisfied the justice so that you could simply know him. And you just need that wire transfer to take place right now. All of your junk put on his back, and you want to begin to receive the goodness. And God says it can happen for you today if you're willing to receive it. So if you want to receive that, you can just quietly in your heart, in your own words right now. It's not about the words. It's about the intent of our hearts. Say, God, I want that. I want to know you. I want to receive. I want that wire transfer to take place. And I need to receive your goodness. God, all of this happened. And because of that, we can say, because you live, man, I can face tomorrow. Because you live, tomorrow can be different than today. God, we thank you, we thank you, we thank you for that. Amen. Well, we're going to sing a song here in a moment that is a song that's being sung all across the globe today. And there are people in far reaches of the world probably singing this song. It talks about because he lives. And as we do that, PJ is going to lead us in a moment. Before that, I want you to take out your connection card. On the back side are some next steps, and we give next steps every weekend just so we can kind of identify what's my spiritual next step. And maybe in these last moments you received from God for the very first time. You just said, God, I want to receive that wire transfer. I need your grace. If you did that, then I just want to ask you to mark that as your next step. We want to celebrate that with you. If you're somebody who maybe, you know, surrendered a part of your life, a relationship, something going on, you said, God, I surrender this. Mark that. Identify it as your next step. Maybe you're here today and you're thinking, man, Kurt, I'm not there yet, but I'm intrigued by this. I want to come back and continue to hear more. Then mark that as your next step. Say, I'll come back. See, listen, you can make that decision to follow God at any point in time. It doesn't have to be here in the seats. It can be tonight, tomorrow, next week. It's just a decision we all have to be faced with at one point or another. So take a moment, mark your next steps, and PJ is going to lead us in this song, Because He Lives.